Public Affairs, today, July 24, 2003, and colleagues will, we have no introduction of speaker-approved bills or major drafting requests, so we'll just follow the rest of the agenda, first having a public hearing and possible work session on House Concurrent Resolution 13, and then move on to public hearing on Senate Bill 751. So let's open up the public hearing on HCR 13, and see if we can ask Representative Rosenbaum, Representative Shetterly, Representative Williams, come forward. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Oh, okay.
Somebody
has to start, I guess. Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, we appreciate the opportunity to be here in front of you on House Concurrent Resolution 13. This is a memoriam resolution to George Joseph, who was the former chief judge of the Oregon Court of Appeals. Those who have practiced law in Oregon any time during the period of time in which Judge Joseph was involved in the court and in the practice of law, I think came to know him either directly or by reputation, is a very able jurist, someone who is very dedicated to the concept of the rule of law, and someone who is both a very colorful and at times engaging and at times challenging individual. He had a strong love of the law, a strong love of the importance of the judicial system in this state, and the memoriam repeats many of his accomplishments, both in serving on bar committees, various awards he received for civil rights, legal services, including the bar's highest honor, the Award of Merit that he received in 1999. He did all this and accomplished much in his life, at the same time dealing with strong and serious physical disabilities, and was truly, I think, for many people, a great inspiration. And those who work closest with him, I think, are honored by having known him and gotten to know him and experience his love of the law. So we recommend this memoriam to you. Both Representative Shetterly and Representative Rosenbaum have a couple of points that I know they wish to make to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Pleasure to be in front of you this afternoon in support of House Concurrent Resolution 13. For the record, I'm Lane Shetterly, State Representative, District 23. There is a substantial bit of biographical information about Judge Joseph in the resolution, and I commend that to you. I think an overview of it underscores how broad his influence was in the life of the people of the state of Oregon, both in public service and also through his charitable and professional activities. I probably have the most personal knowledge and contact with Judge Joseph as in his capacity as Chief Judge of the Oregon Court of Appeals. I guess I would liken the Court of Appeals to a caucus that's made up of all very smart and individual-minded lawyers who have been elevated to their career and through their careers to judges. And you can imagine what it's like to manage a group of 10 judges on the Court of Appeals with the volume of cases that go through that court. But I can tell you that Judge Joseph, in the years that he served as chief judge, established reputation not only as an administrator of the court that made the court work well, it was just a model of judicial administration, but also was jealous of the quality of the work of the court in terms of its opinions, not only the outcome but also the editing. And I know Judge Joseph was famous for the time he spent looking for extraneous commas and placing semicolons instead of periods, right down to that kind of control. And through that, he inspired, I think, the judges of the Court of Appeals to work to his level of demands and quality and during those years really helped establish the Oregon Court of Appeals as one of the most respected mid-level appellate courts in the nation. I think he was a national star in that respect in the work that he did for the Court of Appeals, and we've all benefited from that. The last thing I would say, again, so much of his life is before you on the resolution. I think it was a touching and telling comment that at his memorial service yesterday at Reed College, it's my understanding that every one of his children was in attendance and actually spoke and participated in the program, as well as his wife, clearly a devoted and much-loved family man, as well as what he represented to us in the public sector. So I commend this to you, and thank you for your consideration of House Concur Resolution 13.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Representative Diane Rosenbaum, and I just wanted to add a little of my personal relationship with Judge George Joseph. I got to know him in 1981 when my husband-to-be went to work for Judge Joseph as a young attorney, and then, in fact, a year after that, Judge Joseph performed our wedding ceremony. So both my husband and I knew Judge Joseph, and I can only call him Judge Joseph because that's what he always was and will be to me, and his wife Elizabeth. We had really a close and warm personal relationship with them for almost 20 years. I wanted to just share with you a little about what a remarkable human being he was and how much compassion and love of life he packed into his 72 years. One of the things that hasn't been mentioned is that he had an absolutely diabolical sense of humor, which I think is pretty legendary among lawyers in this state. And my husband had a couple of reminiscences when he was nominated for the Award of Merit of the Bar, so I wanted to just briefly read you these two very funny things that that Judge Joseph said when he was an appellate lawyer. In a well-known instance of oral argument before the Oregon Supreme Court, a justice interrupted him, saying, "Mr. Joseph, that can hardly be a true statement of the law." And Judge Joseph, or then lawyer George Joseph, said, "It will be, Your Honor, if you will allow me to complete my sentence." And then on another occasion, a justice demanded to know the authority for a legal proposition. Having none, George Joseph admitted, "Self-confidence, Your Honor." And I think those stories really reveal just the wit of him, and he was remarkable in that way. I also can tell you, though, that he was full of compassion and an indomitable spirit, and despite having polio at the age of 20 and spending 3 months in an iron lung, he went on to teach himself sailing and do physically active things that would have been remarkable for somebody without his disability. So for me personally, and for my husband, he was truly, I think, one of the most inspiring people and somebody who watched out for us in our careers and our personal lives. So it's my great pleasure to join you in honoring him and his family in this way. I want to thank you especially, Mr. Chair, for bringing this resolution speedily forward, and thank the members of the committee for hearing us today.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I served with Judge Joseph for 3 years on the State Easter Seal Board, and I just want to confirm the kind of compassion and the tremendous contribution he made to the Easter Seal Society, particularly for children in rural areas.
Anything further? All right. Thank you for testimony. No one else signed up for testimony on this resolution. Anybody interested? No? I'm going to close the public hearing then on HCR 13 and open up a work session on HCR 13.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move House Concurrent Resolution 13 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores moves House Concurrent Resolution 13 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? All right. Call the roll, please.
Representative
Ackland.
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Close. Full time.
Representative
Flores. Aye.
Representative
Manning. Aye.
Representative
Sturgeon.
Aye.
And Chair votes aye, and we'll ask Representative Rosenbaum to carry this to the floor. Okay. And that then closes the work session on HCR 13, and we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 751. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if it pleases the Chair, I would ask if Mr. Levitt from the Port of Portland join me just in the presentation to begin, if that's all right.
That's fine. Keith Levitt.
Thank you, Chairman Doyle, members of the committee. I'm Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26. And I come before you as one of the two chief sponsors of Senate Bill 751, sponsored by myself and Senator Nelson, and I'm speaking today on behalf of the sponsorship of this bill. The Willamette River, and I think many of you have had background on this issue from prior legislative sessions, as well as the importance of the river to the economic health of the state of Oregon. 751 came to our Senate Economic and Transportation Committee. It was the last bill we passed out. It was a very complex issue, and we spent a lot of time on this piece of legislation. And the importance of this bill, Mr. Chair, is to recognize how important to the economy of the state of Oregon that the Port of Portland and the Port Harbor be a viable economic entity. I know we've been dealing with issues that are also critical to the economy of the state, and most notably the deepening of the Columbia River Channel, and the importance of moving goods from eastern Oregon down the river, bringing goods and services to and out of the Port of Portland, where these all converge. And we have a very serious difficulty now with the Portland Harbor, since it was listed as a Superfund site some 3 years ago. The economy of the entire state of Oregon is dependent on a very viable port. And with the cleanup projects underway now on the upland side, and I think you may have read the editorial of the Oregonian on Monday in support of 751, also pointing out that how difficult it is to be able to obtain the necessary monies to even do that cleanup under the federal Superfund law, because frankly there's not a lot of money in that. And the importance of a vibrant harbor is so critical to the state of Oregon. The history of these cleanups, because they're very complex, and I think some other testimony that you will have in this hearing will point that out, Mr. Levitt will do, I think, can articulate some of the difficulties, is that when you have an issue as complex as a harbor where many potential responsible parties, the only certainty is years and years of litigation and not remedial action, which is going to be critical to actually getting the economy of the state moving again. 751 establishes the Willamette River Cleanup Authority, which is chaired by the governor and also two members of the Senate and two members of the House, to elevate the discussion of the importance of the Portland Harbor to the state of Oregon. It does not in any way interfere with the current process in which the 10 potentially responsible parties have engaged in the Lower Willamette Group in doing an investigative study, and that will eventually lead in the next 3 to 5 years to a record of decision. What the Willamette River Authority seeks to do is to elevate the discussion as a high level of importance to the Legislative Assembly and the Executive Office, that it is critical to the health of the economy of the state of Oregon that the state do whatever it is necessary to see that this river is cleaned up, and to analyze the results of that process and make recommendations as it seems necessary in order to complete that process. Again, it is a very complex one. This bill comes before you with a lot of support. There were some objections that were raised to the bill, and before I turn it over to Mr. Levin, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to point out a few of those and what we have done to remedy that. They are contained in the -A9 amendment to the bill, and these were a result of the discussion on the floor of the Senate and the discussion since. There are four major changes to the bill, which the proponents are totally happy with. One deletes the word rapid cleanup. That was a request from the governor's office, so we don't raise unnecessary expectations. The second item is an additional preamble that was drafted originally by Senator Carter. The third item also came from the Office of Senator Carter, which is, again, a technical amendment. The governor requested that, in case he is not there for meetings, to make it clear that he can designate a person to chair that committee, and so that was put in. And then finally, Mr. Chair, on lines 15 and 16 of the proposed amendment, there was some issue that Mr. Chamock brought up regarding the ability of this authority to be able to subpoena witnesses. And Mr. Chamock's opinion was, while the legislature clearly has authority to subpoena witnesses, and the governor clearly has authority to subpoena witnesses, there was some question as to whether they duly could exercise the ability to subpoena witnesses. The fact of the matter is, when Mr. McCarthy drafted this legislation, that was boilerplate language from other legislative task forces, and it was not really pertinent to the bill at all. So that language is deleted, so that there is no confusion then about the exercise of power. With that, Mr. Chair, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Levitt to explain why we brought 751 forward and what we hope this will do.
Okay. Before you do that, Keith, and Representative Hansen's here, and he's got a committee hearing to go off to in about 10 minutes.
Yes.
So if I can call Representative Hansen forward. Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gary Hansen, State Representative, House District 44. I'll be very, very brief. Certainly, some of the changes that Senator Metzger has indicated, I certainly support. I think this is an absolute critical issue, both for the state and for the Portland area. The river is sort of the heart of the state of Oregon. The Willamette River flows through much of the state. Certainly keeping it clean, pristine, and flowing should be one of the highest goals of this body or of all Oregonians. The economic impacts, though, are even more important. We've got a great deal of our industrial lands surround the harbor. Much of the commerce goes through the harbor. It's a multimodal transportation center of really the whole transportation center for the state. The river has to be clean. The uplands and the areas surrounding the river have to be clean. If this elevates this problem by involving a state authority to deal and work with it, we will have greatly improved the situation. The amendments I proposed are real simple, and that would be to include a representative and a senator from the areas surrounding harbor cleanup as part of the authority. And I would certainly hope that the committee would give due consideration to the dash 10s. I think they're also included in one of the other amendments. And then I thank you very much for your courtesy in letting me get my 2 cents in before I've got to go somewhere else.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Hansen before he leaves?
Yes.
Oh, Representative Moss Anderson.
How many districts? Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many districts are there to choose from?
There's two House districts and two Senate districts.
Thank you.
And there's a possibility there might be more. Representative Greenlink's district and mine pretty much cover both sides of the river. Technically, there might even be additional ones but I'm not that familiar with the maps. But the purpose of that, there's certainly a great deal of community interest and business interest in trying to do what we can to clean the river and the sites up. That would give a better linkage from those community groups, let them feel that they were closer to the solutions, make it easier for them to give input into the solutions. And I think having local representation there would help facilitate the the problems that are going to be immense and critical to solve.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Mr. Leavitt?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Keith Leavitt with the Port of Portland, here to support Senate Bill 751. What I've passed around is testimony that was presented earlier in the session to Senator Metzger's committee by Sebastian Deegans from our Marine Department. And actually, Sebastian would have been here today, but he's on vacation. But I went ahead and brought that testimony because the question was posed at that time. It was an informational hearing. What are the economic impacts of the listing to the harbor? And this speaks to that. I think it's pretty well understood that this is an economic artery for the state. There are some 940 businesses. There are some 40,000 jobs. From a port perspective, the products that come through the harbor come from all over the state of Oregon. In particular, that stretch of the river is the number one wheat export gateway in the United States. From a grain and from a mineral bulk perspective, we're also number one on the West Coast for exports. And many of you have been out there. I know Representative Barnhart, you've been out there on a tour before, and there's a lot of auto imports as well. All of that is a real critical mass of employment and jobs that are out there right now. I think the stigma that is attached to Superfund and the uncertainty of liability that gets attached to that is the chill that you see on any investment. Businesses are not making investments right now. Land is not being redeveloped. The only major investment that we've had over the last several years that we're aware of is Toyota America's decision to come back to Terminal 4 with the Port of Portland, which is a major investment, and we will redevelop that terminal. But as far as the rest of the harbor is concerned, everyone's pretty much on hold because there's just a lot of uncertainty about their level of liability ultimately that they're going to have in this cleanup project. And that's what it is. It's a project, and we're in the we have about 3 to 5 more years left of the remedial investigation and feasibility study phase. The Port of Portland, along with the Laurel Willamette Group, as Senator Metzger mentioned, has stepped up to fund that process, working with DEQ and EPA. It is at the end of that process, really, that this bill speaks to when you reach a record of decision and you get a good idea of the remedial actions that are going to need to be taking place. We will also have an idea of the amount of pollution that is out there that you can't really trace to a known responsible party. And that's going to be a major policy issue for the state. If we choose to have an expedited cleanup, then we're going to need to have a robust orphan program. And this bill would begin the process of developing that program. And that's why we support the bill. It does not erode the polluter pays principle. If we thought it did, we would not support it. But there is going to be a significant amount of this project and the whole remedial side of it that is where you can't find out who did it. And so much of the problem with Superfund around the country is that you spend 25 years trying to find out who did it. Everyone points the finger and you litigate and you really don't get anywhere. And so we're going to have a decision to make as a citizenry, as a community, as a state, I think, 3 to 5 years out from now anyway, in which we say, are we going to have enough funding available at the state or possibly the federal level if they would ever put Superfund dollars back into the fund to be able to use as a tool to incent PRPs, responsible parties, to do cleanups, and if they don't, the state can step in and do it themselves and bill them later and go after them for much more than it would have costed otherwise for that PRP to step up. That's one thing. The other is where you simply cannot find the responsible party. They're dead and buried. We're dealing in a lot of ways here with pollution from 50, 70, 100 years ago. In the Port of Portland, in our case, a lot of it is around the shipbuilding years in World War II. In which we will be cleaning that up. But in other areas, I think you're going to find those companies are long gone, and somebody is going to have to step up and take that on. Otherwise, I think you will have this complex project go on and on and on for many years. So we are supportive. We think that what this bill does is pretty simple. It makes sure that policymakers in this state have their head in the game, are keeping an eye on what's happening with the cleanup project, and at the appropriate time they will be informed of a very complex set of issues, but be informed enough to be able to make recommendations to the legislature, whether it be next session or the session after that. My guess is there will be issues along on dealing with the Portland Harbor cleanup in front of every legislative session until we get the thing done. So it makes some sense to be able to vet a lot of those issues with this task force, or with the cleanup authority as it's called in this bill, and that's why we're supportive. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Metzger, just on the one amendment that had the change from this authority being now, instead of just the governor, it's now his designee, tends to, things like that would kind of water down either the effectiveness or the authority of this kind of authority. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, again, that was a request from the governor's office yesterday. I think the governor is very engaged in this, and I think his complete concern was one to make it clear that if he was going to be absent from a meeting, that he could designate someone else to be there. I wasn't sure that was absolutely necessary, but I think he wanted to make that clear, and so I had no problem doing that on behalf of the governor for that. But I think it's very, very clear that the governor believes this is very, very critical, but I think that clarity is something he had requested, and I didn't have an objection to that.
So I guess in a similar vein, it wouldn't be a problem then to have designees of the legislators as well?
I don't think we would want to usurp that, Mr. Chair, but...
Well, what's the difference?
Well, that's, again, in trying to, walk gingerly over the request, Mr. Chair. I certainly, if the committee chose to conceptually amend the A9 by deleting that change, I'm not going to object to that. I think that is a courtesy to go.
Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Metzger, the bill reads that this authorizes uses of the Pollution Control Fund. Do we have a fiscal on what this group will cost?
Yes, there's no fiscal at all, Representative Close. In fact, it was written for that way. All this does is authorize, it is put in statute that remedial actions would be an authorized use, but it would still be up to the legislature to actually have to provide any funding for that. But right now, the Pollution Control Fund has very specific authorizations in which the legislature can allocate monies for. This simply puts that as an acceptable use, but there is no allocation of dollars at this time. Hopefully what would happen, Representative Close, is, I think as Mr. Levin was pointing out, once the record of decision is made and the authority has been following this process and making a determination, that if there is a determination that there is an orphan share, for example, of X amount of dollars that we need to get at, that we can't, there's not a particular identifiable responsible party, then if the legislature at its wishes could allocate funds for bonding, and then it would be legal to do that under the Pollution Control Fund.
Follow up.
Is there a cost for this authority to operate, though? Is there still?
No. In fact, thank you, Representative Close, for that question. One thing we worked very, very hard on was to take the fiscal out of this. We worked closely with the legislative fiscal, and I will point out for those who would like to hopefully maybe volunteer to serve as legislative members that you'll notice in the last paragraph of the bill there are no expenses even allocated to people to participate. So you need to do this because you think it's good public policy, not because there will be any remuneration.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Moss Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, I'm not sure you're the one to answer this, maybe DEQ is, but don't they have the right to issue bonds? Would this exceed the role that they play with this particular fund?
Well, thank you, Representative Moss Anderson. Again, they have authority under the law for the Pollution Control Fund. they would have no other authority other than for those items which are listed under that fund. Certainly the legislature could always, issue general obligation bonds if they were, supported by the electorate, because we'd have to have an electorate for that. This one is already in law, and therefore it would, by adding this as a acceptable use of those bonds, that the legislation itself would simply be permissive. But they would not have the authority without going to the voter for a different type of bonding, other than for that which is currently listed in statute. But again, maybe DEQ might be able to clarify that with. That's a little beyond my expertise. We took their guidance in how that would be written.
It would be nice, follow-up. It'd be nice to know if they can already do this.
Okay. DEQ. Do you want to just have that question dealt with a little later? If you want to come forward and just answer that question, that's fine.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dick Peterson. I'm the Land Quality Administrator for the Department of Environmental Quality. Mr. Chair, Representative Monis Anderson, DEQ currently has been given authority to sell bonds for orphan site cleanups, actually from the last legislative session. And if in the Pollution Control Fund there is a line that allows us to use orphan site money to go clean up orphan site. This is a very different use directed specifically to Portland Harbor and the river. Currently, we have sold bonds that go to help pay for orphan sites around the state that are where the responsible party is unknown, unwilling, or unable to pay, and we have used that over a number of years.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And John Christensen and Robin Clance.
Let me go first.
Yeah, go ahead.
Who are the Eighth Amendment?
You're going to hear.
Okay. Sir?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Christensen. I am senior legislative staff to Senator Margaret Carter. Also, for the record, I'd like to make it very clear that the Portland Harbor is within Senator Carter's district. I think that's really important to understand. With me today is Robin Clance, who is the chair of the St. John's neighborhood. Some of you are familiar with Portland, know St. John's Bridge, which is absolutely beautiful. And also he is chair of the advisory committee for the Portland Harbor cleanup. And Senator Carter asked that I introduce him to you.
Thank you for letting me come and speak to you this afternoon. I appreciate the care and concern the legislature has brought forward regarding the Portland Harbor. However, I do not support this bill. I think it duplicates some existing state activities, as was already brought up, regarding the bonding of orphan sites. It seems that the main issue here is whether or not we can rapidly clean up the harbor, which even with this bill, we're not going to accelerate that. We're not going to change much of that. It's not going to happen. We have to go through the remedial investigation, feasibility study. It's ongoing. Appreciate Keith from the port coming and talking about this, because they are a very active group in the Lower Willamette group and in our CAG meetings. We have spent a lot of time in the last year and a half, 2 years, going forward with community outreach and making sure that the harbor cleanup is done right the first time. And during that, I think if the legislature is serious about engaging DEQ more forthrightly in the cleanup, that expanding the ability of the Pollution Control Fund would probably be better area well spent, expanding their ability to bond in. If orphan sites do come up on the harbor, then we would
love to see the state be able to step forward. However, the end water is EPA. EPA will control that. They will do the cleanup and oversee that. There has been over 60 PRPs identified already and as directly involved in the pollution of the harbor. As the remedial study goes forward, we will decide as a group, which is EPA, DEQ, Lower Willamette Group, and the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group, which has a representation of several neighborhood associations that border along the harbor. It's along these concerns that I worry that in an effort to accelerate because of economic demands, and believe me, I live right there next to the port, T4, so I know the economics impacts of the port. It's a working port, and we have a lot of issues to address out there. Cleaning the harbor is only one of making it economic viable. But what we need to do is go forward. And if PRPs are not stepping up, that we don't have, the EPA has the wherewithal to bring action against them to have them pay. And if they don't pay their part, they can bring legal action, bring triple damages. So the hammer is there already. I'm just kind of dumbfounded, I guess, a little bit about this measure that I don't see it accelerating. And if we do really in earnest want to address orphan sites, let's address it in some of the legislation. And the ability of the groups that are there, like the control policemen. I also brought this is the Portland Harbor Soup Fund. So I don't know if you folks have seen this yet. And this basically gives you a background. I'd like to go ahead and hand these out. This is an introduction to it. And if you want, we also have on CD. This has all been printed and done by Lower Willamette Group, which is, like we said, 10 of the PRPs, the potentially responsible parties. And that 10 has paid, I don't know the total dollar amount, I know it's over the millions, for where we're at now. So PRPs are paying. It's not EPA paying for what's going on right now. And they're still paying. They're committed to pay to get the study done and get to what we decide is what we call the ROD, the Record of Decision. And hopefully at that time, we're encouraging other PRPs. They don't have to step forward as far as joining the Lower Willamette Group, but we want to see the state and other organizers help us to convince them to step forward and sign the Record of Decision and participate. And I think there's more than enough PRPs right now to help us go forward. And as orphan sites, which I don't think will be as many as if you see the data that the Lower Willamette Group has collected, and we can, like I said, we can get you copies of the CD that has a lot of this information and the sampling. The stack I brought is just a stack of, these are my notes as that affect me, that's gone on just since I've taken over as the chair, which has been less than, I think, 6 months or 8 months. So there's a lot of data to make a hasty decision on how we go forward, I think would not be prudent. I'd like to go ahead and pass this out if I may.
In the committee minister assistant.
Thank you for your time.
Got questions?
Sir,
Christensen?
Yes, sir. John Christensen, for the record. Senator Carter has had a number of concerns about this, and actually I found it interesting. They parallel some of the questions that Representative Close had, and that had to do with the fiscal impact, the payback strategies that would be used for the bonds. It's not been identified. It's not been clarified in the statutes that are being proposed to you. Also, when we reviewed the fiscal analysis and the staff analysis that came out of Senator Metzger's committee, we discovered that it had DEQ listed as the lead agency for the cleanup, and it's inaccurate. EPA is the lead agency. And it's very, very clear in the federal law and in this circumstance that EPA is the lead agency. And that's a misperception that we'd like to clarify. We also have amendments if the committee should decide to go forward, which are under 8, and it includes, it's sort of a composite of the concerns in our analysis. One of the issues that we identified to the committee in a work session on the Senate side, there has not been, incidentally, a public hearing on this particular version of the bill, was the constitutionality of a specific provision, which I think you've seen the opinion from Legislative Council. We've also recommended, and Senator Metzger picked up on it, that the bonds, if there are bonds, be allowed and permissive, not mandatory, for administrative and operational costs that should arise, like for DEQ. And actually, what he did is he lifted our language from Amendment 6, which you don't have in front of you, and brought it over. We've expanded that in number 8 to not only the department, which is a reference to DEQ, but also to state agencies. And the reason why we did this was because the actual Superfund site are constitutional lands under the State Land Board, which are held in public trust, which were given to the state on the admission to the Union. And we would not want to see significant or substantial resources from other state agencies, such as the Division of State Lands, specifically used towards this effort, because we're really taking from the Common School Fund. So that's the reason why we would have that extension beyond the department to other state agencies. There are a couple other comments that we have, and one is the findings in Senator Metzger's bill. Some of them are fairly punitive or unkind to the EPA, and we would encourage cooperation and take out language such as unnecessary delay and that kind of stuff. The other thing is, there's a statement in the findings in Senator Metzger's bill which clearly states that the state has the authority and capability to do the cleanup. This authority has no authority. And if you look at it, the only specific charge to it is to recommend the amount of the bonds that are to be issued. That's the only specific charge of this group. So we wanted some of that cleaned up too. And Representative Hansen, we've had discussions with him. He actually, Representative Hansen represents North Portland, which is part of Senator Carter's district, and our office and his office both concur with the recommendation that should you proceed, that at least one of the two legislators be from the Superfund site district, and that's our request. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
I apologize if you've already said this. This is directed to Robin.
Okay.
We're told in the committee report that the EPA is in charge of the cleanup process. However, they're not providing money. I'm trying to follow the money on this. Page 2 of your booklet talks about CERCLA. It talks about federal law creating a tax on industries to maintain the fund, and this tax is currently not being collected. The law has lapsed. That part of the law has lapsed. Can you explain why the federal government is not collecting that tax?
They chose not to. I think as a state, we should be putting the pressure on our state representatives and senators to reinstate that tax collection and reinstate that tax back into the Superfund. Why Congress and this administration, well, actually it's previous administration, what was it, 97? 96, 97, they quit collecting it. I don't know the exact year, so please don't quote me on those numbers. But I don't know why, other than they decide not to. It'd be nice if they would, because we as a state have several EPA cleanups going on. We have along the harbor, we have 60 sites, ongoing cleanup sites with DEQ currently going on.
So is there no money for cleanup from the federal government?
It's winding down. The funds are winding down. I couldn't give you the exact total. Last number I heard was like $30 million, which is not enough to do a cleanup. But right now, the PRPs have stepped forward, and they're doing the remedial investigation. Then we'll come up with a process of cleanup once the rods decide. Once we have the record decision, then EPA will go through, if they need to, go to litigation to make the PRPs step forward and pay their fair share. If they don't, and clean up. Normally, what the process would be, EPA would fund the cleanup and then go back and do a bill against the PRPs that didn't step forward, and that could be up to triple damages.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Sir?
Senator Berger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I'm a little confused about who is in which organization. I'm not familiar with you, so
okay.
I'm not from the Portland area. The Lower Willamette Group, as I'm looking at these names, one of those is the Port of Portland, is
correct,
a part of the group, and yet they support the bill. And which one of these are you with?
I'm with the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group. The Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group is a group of citizen advocates in the community to advise and work with the EPA regarding the work plan and the remedial investigation and the feasibility study. We have technical assistance through Willamette Riverkeeper, through a grant, a TAG grant, and it's a target area grant for having technical assistance to review the work plan so we can have engineers, our scientists, I guess best term, I don't know the exact term for the people, but they review it and then we discuss on whether or not we think it's addressing, the work plan addresses our concerns as a community. It's required by law for EPA to have the community input on the decision process, which I think is very valuable. Myself, I am the current chair of that group, but I'm also the chair of the St. John's Neighborhood Association, which the Port of Portland, Rivergate, St. John's Bridge, all the way down just short of McCormick Baxter site, falls into my neighborhood association. We're one of the largest neighborhood associations in the state of Oregon. We cover from what we call a railroad cut, but it's all the railroad in North Portland on the peninsula, all the way both river boundaries, Columbia River and Willamette River. So we have a lot of land use issues going on all the time.
Are the people that are involved, not in the neighborhood group, but in the other group that you're with, are they also residents that are close, that live close to the harbor?
Yes, some are and some are not. We strive for, on our membership, I was actually, as one of the people involved with the formation of the CAGNO, the initial group, I was a little later come to the table, but I stepped up to what we call the administration group, and I actually helped draft the bylaws for the group, Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group, and who would be members. And it was a consensus through the group that we want a wide, diverse reflection of the community and the people that we use the harbor and the river. So we have recreation slots for members. We have business representation. We actually have to on and off the possibility for PRPs to have representation in our group through the business representation because they are still impacted by cleanup, whether or not they're a PRP. They still are affected by the river. We have neighborhood associations, community at large, and we're right in the process of trying to recruit students from the area also. So it kind of a little bit any group that's interested are involved in it. We also have recreation and environmental groups. So we have the idea is to keep a balance and not be any one radical group controlling the group, but be a fair, open process that really reflects the community that's going to be impacted with what happens at the harbor.
John, in the dash eights, those address most all of Senator Carter's concerns?
I would say, ma'am, if the bill moves forward, that they probably do. They address the representation issue. They address the quality of the findings that were in the original bill. They address the constitutional issues. There's also the issue underlining some of this, which is the role of the State Land Board. And we're concerned that and I know you're from Coos Bay, you know the significant role of the Land Board with submerged and submersible lands, that it not be compromised too early in the process. And I'm speaking for myself right now, but I can understand possibly, and I haven't talked to the governor about this, but why it may be prudent for him to step back a half a step from the process because eventually the land board is going to have to deal with this as a constitutional issue. Not as an issue, but as a constitutional action in regard to these being submerged and submersible lands under public trust that will have to be cleaned up. So I would say yes.
Follow up.
The other thing is,
Let me clear up at what point I see you see the conflict of interest here where a person serving on the land board. But at this point,
I wouldn't say it's a conflict of interest.
We have a question.
I'm sorry.
Would you say at this point the authority that has been put together with the representative and governor is you're totally comfortable with that?
Our original suggestion in amendments under 6, which you do not have in front of you, was to keep it under EQC and the DEQ, and to keep it within an executive line of operation in the departments. That way, you're not going too far out from the existing EPA-DEQ process, but still giving DEQ and the EQC capacity or capability if they needed to go beyond that. And also, they have the standard role and advisory to the legislature and the governor. When you, I don't know if I should say this, but when you get elected officials involved in a process,
it's always better.
Yes, ma'am. But it's a different dynamic. Thank you, ma'am. And thank you very much. I appreciate that help. With regard to the St. John's area, I have lived in Coos Bay and in Charleston, as we've talked. St. John's, that part of the district, is very much like a lot of Coos Bay and North Bend, working class people living near the river. One of the things I really have enjoyed in knowing Robin is he's actually Native American, so I've seen him bring some of his values to me and his working values.
Any further questions, this panel? Representative Close.
I just have one question on the dash 8. I noticed in section 4 you're repealing this January 2, 2008, and the other amendments don't do that. Is that?
Oh, actually, thank you for bringing that up. What we found not in Senator Metzger's bill was a reporting date to the legislature. We also, when I talked to council, they said their standard practice on a commission or a group like this is to have some kind of, I don't know if the proper word is sunset, but some type of conclusionary date for its work, so that you don't have, and this is not what they said, but I presume the intent is, so you don't have a continual bureaucracy kind of emerging, and that's a particular concern with an entity that doesn't have a budget. It doesn't have any identified staff. Every agency I know, or entity I know that functions like this, at least has letterhead and telephone and somebody to do something. And none of that's been identified in this process. So if it's contained or booked in or something like that, it seems to be a healthier way to deal with the state's limited resources.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Further questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And
sir, Senator Carter has a meeting with the head of the Department of Transportation, and I have to go to that. So
can we stop the hearing then?
No, I just wanted to tell you I would come back in case there were any other further questions from to our office.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Lewis Pitt and John Chandler.
For the record, I'm Louis Pitt, Jr. I'm Director of Government Affairs and Planning for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. Chairman, if I may, I invited Michael Mason, our tribal lobbyist, who has, I think, more of a background on how Superfund the laws work and such. Senate Bill 751, as Director of Government Affairs and Planning for the Tribes, is that we've been participating, I think, trying to get the cleanups all around the state by many, many forms of impacts that are negative to our something called treaty rights. And so again, it's our position, too, as a fellow government within the state. When we met with a couple of governors in the past, and our tribal council and leadership made the mistake of letting me lead the conversation, is that since our tribal governments have been here for thousands of years, we referred to the state government as a junior government. So we've been here quite a while, and we're very proud of what we've done, I think, in trying to take care of our universe around us and our thing called a treaty right. What happened, we were here first, and the Middle Oregon tribes encompasses two tribes, the Warm Springs and the Wasco, and we owned it from Cascades to the area down by Bend to area Strawberry Mountains, Willow Creek, and to the other side of the Columbia River, and basically, as owners, we negotiated with the United States of America through a treaty, a contract that as long as the river flows and the sun shines and the grass grows, is that we're going to have our way of life to a large degree guaranteed by that treaty. Within that treaty, there's a number of different rights. One is the on-reservation rights, and two is the actual lands that we gave to the United States, 10 million plus acres. And those lands are called ceded lands, gave up title to but reserved the uses of the resources, even though they're owned by other people, other entities. But within that, too, we also had what's called usual and accustomed rights. And Willamette Falls and fishing that we can do by law on the Willamette River at Willamette Falls for all the fishes that go through there, including eels, very important fish to us for many reasons, is that not only do we have, a good reason why. Why? Because those fish are important to our way of life, for our sustenance, for our ceremonial, and for our, when allowed by agreed to management plans, is that a commercial use. Pardon me. So we do have, I think, standing, and have pushed for that standing and received that with the present structure. We're not here to tell you what your structure should be within the state. Is that that's really your business, the process and such. Is that we're just here to educate, think about our standing legally and such. The structure that is imposed upon us right now is U.S. v. Oregon. There's a court case where Oregon, within a federal court, I call it a shotgun marriage, is that we have co-management authorities. And when it comes to this federal treaty obligation, how does that work? So again, it's up to us as a sovereign to judge how that, how any process or any structure impacts our sovereignty. So we're very cautiously watching a number of things, including 751, of which if 751 gets us closer to resolution, closer to a cleanup, is that we're in support of it. It looks as though it may do that. Again, how you do that is really, really your business. And if there's something that I think would go against the grain of what we viewed our technical authorities to be and sovereign authorities, I'd sure let you know. But at this time, it looks like a good idea. The eels, again, salmon, very important to us. Eels, something that's really forgotten about, is we call it assume in the Warm Springs language. We have three tribes. And those eels do supply foods, oils, different materials for clothing. It's a medicine of sorts, and it's very valuable to us. And and again, is we have played, I think, a very disciplined role in the past to work with the with this very, I think it's very complex, and the problem is very is also very complex, and with the ebb and flow of the politics of the EPA, and I think that for us, the Warm Springs solution that we've had to do at home many times is we get tired of waiting for the government to come in and do solutions for us. And like our clinic that we have now on reservation, is that we got tired of the promise of building us a Indian health welfare center, and we built our own and turned around and leased it to the federal government. So we got our structure, and we were able to have a quick fix. So this type of fix as to EPA is leaving us stranded, I say us, Oregon tribes and the Portland folks and the local residents, is that it's not unfamiliar to us. And so anyway, is that the closer we get to actual cleanup to protect our Indian way of life, which is manifested in the existence of fish, and clean waters is very much a part of that. And we do have rights as an Indian tribe down at Willamette Falls, Willamette River, and not just on the reservation. A lot of folks really supported us a few years ago, and just wonderful. We will support your rights all the way. And excuse me, do you realize we're talking off reservation also? And they go, whoa. So it does take some time, but again, this is who we are. That's part of the deal. Before Oregon was Oregon, it was all ours, not just Warm Springs, but the many tribes that were here. And so, again, we're still fighting to protect our way of life as we've had to do before the state. And I think we're working together on a number of fronts that is really probably the first of its and the only of its kind in some areas in the United States. So I'm not here to brag, but we do have some things to brag about. And this is, again, we're willing to, we're supplying a lot of technical support and trying to figure out how to get this place cleaned up. So, again, any turn?
Thank you. And Mr. Mason, we didn't have you on the witness list. Did you want to testify on something?
Chair Doyle, I'm just here to answer questions that the committee may have that stump Mr. Pitt.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Please.
Mr. Chandler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler with Legislative Advocates here on behalf of Schnitzer Steel Industries and the Urban Developers Coalition in support of Senate Bill 751. Excuse me. I have handed in written testimony. I won't go into any greater detail than that other than to say that on behalf of our clients who represent property owners industries along the Willamette, you've heard from the testimony that already, and you're going to hear more, is a complicated, contentious, miserable issue. And I think 751 represents a good step towards getting a group together to fix it. The federal government needs us to do it. We need us to do it. We commend it to you. We think it's a good process. We support it.
Okay. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Does Schnitzer have a position on any of these amendments? And if so, what is it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Doyle, I believe we're in favor of the Dash 9s. Would support the Dash 9s.
Thank you.
I think there's a Dash 10 floating around as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we've seen those.
Further questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Committee.
And Travis Williams and Rhett Lawrence.
Representative Doyle and the rest of the committee, my name is Travis Williams, and I represent an organization called Willamette Riverkeeper. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization that works on behalf of water quality and habitat throughout the Willamette Basin. We have been interested in this process, the entire cleanup, from the time when it was being discussed several years ago as to whether the state should lead the cleanup on this. We got to the point where that didn't happen, and the U.S. EPA designated the 5.5-mile stretch of Portland Harbor a federal Superfund site. And because of that, we and other community groups have been working within that process and making the best of it. The thing that bothers us about Senate Bill 751 is the rhetoric that seems to surround the discussion of this issue does not always square with the facts. In fact, it is troubling to hear some of the things that have been stated. To date, I think this notion that nothing, quote, nothing is happening, end quote, in the Portland Harbor is it borders on the absurd. When you look at the companies that comprise the Lower Willamette Group, including the Port of Portland, these are the same people that will tell you how fantastic this process is right now, how much progress the Lower Willamette Group has made to date, how the work plan for the study portion, the remedial investigation, is commencing well, and they're in the water doing all kinds of fantastic work. These are the same folks. I think that and that sort of thing is very troubling because there is a tremendous amount of work. The EPA is engaged. The Oregon Department of Environmental Quality is engaged. Numerous contractors, as you may imagine, are engaged. There's work happening as I sit here and speak to figure out the full extent of contamination and what leading to a base of information that will provide us what contaminants are in the sediments, where are they, how have they moved, who might they be affiliated with in terms of companies. And I'm saying, I'm deviating from my written testimony here because I think the premise that this is built around is simply flawed. I would also tell you that leading up to development of this bill, groups like ours, the Community Advisory Group for Portland Harbor, we were never consulted. We were never asked. And again, this goes back to the notion that nothing is happening. The other troublesome aspect of this is there are those who in the media and elsewhere who would love to wrap this issue within the cloak of former Governor Tom McCall. It is simply a different animal. This has nothing to do with the fine efforts made over 30 years ago to establish primary treatment of wastewater's discharge throughout the Willamette Basin. And that's a simple fact. What we have today is a process set forth by the federal government that is making progress. I think the economic questions are very interesting, too, that the gentleman from the port raised. If you look at the something that we've heard, the lack of investment and touching on this uncertainty with Portland Harbor, I think that it is probably more realistic to connect any lack of investment with the macro scale of the economy at this point. I think it's also interesting to notice that when they combine these figures into Portland Harbor proper, you're also talking about the Columbia River and Terminal 6. I think companies that continue to conduct robust economic activities such as Gunderson, Cascade General, smaller entities like Marcom that work on ship refurbishing, there's a lot of work going on. So I think that to some degree that's simply a scare tactic to provide a rationale for this discussion of public public bond funding. Now, I think to explore that issue, you know, you really have to look at the base of what Superfund requires. You have companies actively contributing today. You have an environment in which at some future point, after information is gathered through the remedial investigation, that decisions will have to be made and people will have to step up to the plate. I think because at this point we don't even know how much contamination might be classified as orphan at this point, to jump to conclusions is dangerous. You set a very nasty precedent by saying that the state of Oregon and the people of Oregon will back a significant chunk of money and bonds to meet financial obligations that are already present through federal law. So I think that I would urge all of you to take a step back and look at this very carefully, as I know you are currently, and to think about what is really being asked here. Again, a very dangerous precedent. I think that the notion that nothing happens unless there is a huge pot of money, whether from the federal government or from the state, is inaccurate. The majority of Superfund work occurs because private entities pitch in. They are asked to, they are required to through federal law. I find it also interesting the redundancy within this proposal. The governor, House legislative members, the Senate, can inquire today and make recommendations legislatively about money to be spent for bonds for cleanup. The problem I see with this is it puts a focus on that discussion, the aura of authority. If you have an entity that is merely going to have representatives from designated by folks like yourself, I think it does diminish the overall impact of what this authority could be. If you have an authority that is unfunded, yet has no fiscal impacts, it stands to figure that maybe there's not a lot of authority there. Unless the simple message is to, again, bring up this notion of public bond funding, because there are entities within the harbor, whoever they may be, who want you to think that nothing is going to happen unless public funding above and beyond what is already there comes into this whole scenario. So let me just, since I've deviated significantly from my written testimony, I urge you to look at that. I'm to some degree reacting to what we have already heard here today. I mean, it's insulting. And I'll leave it at that. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, Mr. Williams, I'm not sure what you said that caused half the committee to leave, but no, I'm kidding. Actually, the Democrats had to move on to a caucus meeting, so just as information to the other members and to the public as well, we won't have a work session on this bill today for that reason. But any questions, Mr. Williams? Okay. Mr. Lawrence.
Thank you. Chair Doyle, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Rhett Lawrence. I'm an environmental advocate with OSPRG, the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan public interest advocacy organization with more than 25,000 members across the state. Appearing before you today to urge you to oppose Senate Bill 751A. I also have submitted written testimony that goes into some detail our concerns with the bill. And a lot of what I cover in those in my written testimony has already been stated by Travis and Robin and some others already today. Our basic concern, I would say, again, is that this bill is just unnecessary, creating a duplicative process for work that's already being done, and sort of creating this aura, this public perception that, the legislature has finally done something to get the Willamette River cleaned up, when in fact, of course, this addresses only the Portland Harbor, which is a very small portion of the Willamette River, and so in that sense, the authority is somewhat misleadingly named, because the Willamette River Cleanup Authority is addressing only this 5.5-mile stretch of the Portland Harbor. But it would allow the public to believe that this authority has taken care of the cleanup of the Willamette River, that something is finally happening when, in fact, has already been stated. A lot is going on already. And I just do not believe that this bill brings us any closer to a solution of the entirety of the problem of the Willamette River, or even the Portland Harbor, because that, that process has already been is already in place and already is working. So I would also just note our concerns with that the ultimate outcome of this authority. There's nothing in this bill, to my knowledge, which actually states that the bonding that would be recommended out of this authority would be limited to cover only the orphan sites. And in fact, one of the earlier versions of this bill, as you may know, had a provision in which, were the state to take the lead on the cleanup, would only be able to go after certain of the responsible parties in the harbor for reimbursement of the funds that were expended. And so we just need to certainly make sure that anything that came out of this authority was limited specifically to cleaning up the orphan sites, because as has been noted, there is very little money left in the federal coffers to pay for those cleanups anymore. And so, we just need to make sure that we're not undermining the fundamental concept of polluter pays, which is, it's critical to Superfund law. We would just urge this committee to oppose the bill. The process is already underway. This is the wrong solution to a very real problem that is the Portland Harbor and the Willamette River, and I'm just not convinced that this bill is going to get us any closer to an actual solution. So I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any questions? Mr. Lawrence,
Are there solutions that would actually speed up or otherwise improve the cleanup of the Superfund site?
Chair Doyle, for one, as Robin Plant stated earlier, I think we could focus much more attention on the federal level at getting that the federal Superfund tax reauthorized so that we have this pot of money there to clean up orphan sites if they if they turn out to exist at the Portland Harbor. We don't know at this point what share of those of the cleanup money is going to be in an orphan site. I mean, it may well be that 90% of the costs are attributable to a specific party. So, I mean, that would be one solution, I would say, is to come up with a pot of money, specifically directed at the orphan sites, which this bill does not seem to do.
Okay, certainly. One short thing. In looking at this, too, it would make much more sense if we were 3 or 4 years down the road and we had a known quantity of orphan sediment that we were dealing with. Today we do not. And part of the fear is that there are those who I believe might be inclined to push certain parts of the harbor, certain types of contamination in the sediment into that orphan column if they knew there were a ready pot of funding to help pay them to clean it up. I think that's an important point. The other thing I want to mention is that last week's decision by EPA not to provide funding to McCormick and Baxter, which I think is driving some of the urgency on this, it's important to know that there is money today to fund work to develop the plan for the cap, which was the main next piece of work to happen on that site today. So that work is going to continue. The other thing you don't hear in op-ed pieces by the Oregonian and others is that there will be future opportunities to bring McCormick and Baxter back to the funding table. So it's not as if it's a done deal. Whoops.
Okay.
And that's it. So.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you. Liz Frankel and Martin Taylor.
Thank you very much. Liz Frankel for the League of Women Voters of Oregon, and virtually everything that I would like to say has probably already been said. I will telescope considerably. I respect the fact that you are the committee, and I am speaking to you.
Well, you're also speaking for the record.
Correct. The League of Women Voters did and has supported and defended CERCLIT at a national level. One. Two, the League does support the polluter pay concept. Three, we have heard many arguments as to the slowness in the development of the cleanup process and doubt about adequate federal funding. The League is concerned that there is no assurance that the state process will be any faster. The League is also concerned about the ability of the people of Oregon to pay for the process for the orphan sites, particularly when the total amount is totally unknown to either the state or the federal government at this time. Finally, the League has concerns that by assuming responsibility for assigning liability for cleanup, Oregon may have far less ability to collect than the federal government. Both of these factors could have a significant impact or effect on future Oregon taxpayers. The League shares concerns with others for the cleanup of the Portland Harbor site. We, however, find no assurance that this bill is the answer. In fact, we do not believe it is necessary. Strong and energetic support by the governor, the legislature, and the public for federal funding might be far more effective than support for this bill. This bill presumes without evidence that state enforcement clout and state processes are ipso facto more powerful, effective, or faster than the existing process. This does not appear to us to be the case. The League asks that you do not pass 751A out of committee. And probably there would be if you're going to pass something out. Anyway, thank you very much for your time, and I will attempt to answer any question.
Thank you. Martin Taylor?
For the record, my name is Martin Taylor. I'm here representing the Sierra Club of Oregon today. You guys won the battle of attrition. A great deal of the kind of comments that the Sierra Club would like me to present today have come up, so I will be very brief. I think you have a couple of core concerns from the environmental community, and they really focus on the polluter pays concept. The polluter pay concept on the surface may sound like a environmental concept, but ultimately it is a concept that's about defending taxpayers from assuming a tax liability for pollution that was really caused by others. And there are times where pollution simply has to be cleaned up. The Willamette River is one of those. We're losing our species. We're losing the clean water that we need, and we are now drinking out of the Willamette River as well. So there is a point where we have to do something about the river and the harbor. And the question is, who will bear that cost? I don't think that we as Oregonians right now have the ability to fund that cost. And certainly from the perspective of justice, we shouldn't be asked to when there are polluters responsible. Sierra Club simply believes that there is some jeopardy to the polluter pay concept in creating an additional authority that could confuse the current process being used by the EPA and potentially create a pot of money prematurely, which would make it easier to get some of the polluters out from under their responsibility. And to be honest, I think a great deal of the concern coming from my client is that they feel as if there's a hidden hand of folks who are involved on the polluter end involved in this bill. And I'm not comfortable making that assertion myself. I know that there are folks that have testified here today that are closer to that issue than myself. But if there is a chance that this is going to create an opportunity for folks to shift responsibility from themselves to the state and the citizens of Oregon, I think that deserves some real consideration.
Ms. Taylor, you're talking about protection of the taxpayers, and yet isn't City of Portland, Port of Portland, some other public entities going to be sharing some of this responsibility anyway?
They should share the portion of the responsibility for the pollution they created. That's true. And it's mostly it'd be a question if you were from, Bend or Klamath Falls. If we make this a general state obligation, then it makes it easier for some even public entities to defer some of their costs. Why are they having to pick up that burden? But there's an area of expertise here that I'm afraid I wasn't able to bring the correct Sierra Club member here to talk to you about, but it's beyond my expertise, so I'm conveying the concern of my client.
All right. Thank you. Questions? Nope. Thank you. And John DiLorenzo.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Madam Vice Chair, and the other absent members who I'm sure will have an opportunity to review at least portions of the record. My name is John DiLorenzo. I'm a lawyer from Portland, and I'm here on behalf of urging I vote on Senate Bill 751. I said I'm here on behalf of because that's how I almost always start my presentations, but in this case, I'm here on behalf of myself. I have no client, and what I would like to do is take a moment to review the history of this bill, answer as best I can some of the issues and concerns that have been raised by some of the parties who have testified against it, and comment on the amendments. And the genesis of the bill is quite interesting. The reason I have no client is because this bill is an idea. Several years ago, I gave a speech in front of the an environmental business organization talking about the aftermath of House Bill 2010 from the last session, Portland Harbor Bill,
talking about how I felt I had made some mistakes with respect to the manner in which it was advocated and what I thought should be done in the future to address the harbor. Senator Metzger, who deserves great credit for having proposed this bill and having worked on it, spent endless hours working on it, was kind enough to go to the presentation. And the presentation was also covered by the Oregonian, and a few other parties had indicated great interest in some of my ideas. At the beginning of the session, Senator Metzger called me and told me that he was introducing a bill. And I informed him that I had no client. And he said, "So what? Would you like to be part of a grand conversation regarding this?" And I said, "I'd be delighted." And so, contrary to many of the statements that have been made by a number of organizations regarding the bill, I am not the chief proponent of this bill. I am a proponent. I have had a lot to do with writing it, but as a favor to Senator Metzger, and there have been many more people involved in the advocacy of this bill, because basically this bill is a good idea. I have reviewed Mr. Lawrence's testimony, his written testimony, and although he didn't mention it orally, I cannot help but note on the second page, the third and fourth paragraphs, attribute this bill to me personally and suggest that I have some private hidden agenda regarding it. And I would just like to say that I think we would do much better in addressing our environmental difficulties if we did our best to avoid hyperbole and instead were more interested in focusing on the quality of a concept and an idea than necessarily concentrating on the identity of the proponents. I think that if we're truly interested in forging good public policy, that should be our approach. Now, there are approximately 80 responsible parties who are identified in the Portland Harbor General Notice List. Only 10 of the PRPs have signed the EPA's administrative consent order to conduct a remedial investigation and a feasibility study. Although the natural resource claims, the claims that you heard about regarding the eels and the tribes' concerns and those sorts of things, although those natural resource claims are now told by the Superfund designation, they have not as yet been addressed. Properties along the river are losing value. The Port of Portland is suffering an economic downturn as a result. And most of the PRPs are basically sitting this one out, allowing the 10 signatory parties to conduct the studies and to become hopelessly enmeshed in a regulatory maze. I do not view this as a very healthy situation for the parties concerned or for the river itself, and I predict that once the magnitude of the cost of implementing a remedial investigation becomes apparent, there will be little cooperation among the PRPs. It's one thing to step up to the plate for $1 million apiece to conduct a study. It is another thing to agree to share a $150 million obligation 10 ways. The long and the short of all this is that we will be embroiled in years of litigation and negotiations before the sediment component of this project is ever actually undertaken in earnest. Now, I believe our state's environmental policy goals are in danger of being impeded because we have allowed blame and the search for a culprit to become the hallmark of our environmental policy. In many ways, we need to identify a responsible party before we do anything to remediate the harm. Now, this is not to say that fault should not play a major role in our policy, but it should be subordinate to action. The policy also impedes action because our system of cost allocation is so inequitable. There is nothing fair about the Superfund program or our equivalent state process. Under federal Superfund, the EPA can issue an abatement order. PRPs must comply. They have no real defenses. If you are there, you're in. Only after expending significant dollars can a PRP recover against the Superfund if they sustain the burden of proving their innocence. On the other hand, the EPA can do the work and pursue the PRPs for costs and three times damages. The state process is similarly coercive, and I know of no other area of the law where one's guilt is presumed and one's innocence must be proven other than in this arena.
Now, the original version of Senate Bill 751 was basically based around the speech that I gave and the additional proposals and ideas that Senator Metzger had contributed. It recognized that the pollution sediments are at the river bottom, and the river is owned by the state of Oregon. And so this is tantamount to a circumstance in which someone else has polluted our land. Both the federal law and the state law always allow a landowner to enter into an agreement to remediate pollution on their land. For the same reason, our state law and the federal law would allow the state of Oregon to step into the shoes of any PRP and conduct a study and a remedial action to remove the sediments. If the state of Oregon expends money to respond to EPA's requirements, then the state is already authorized to pursue others for contribution claims. In addition, a statutory method could be devised to make pursuit of contribution claims easier and fairer. We felt that the legislature should authorize approximately $150 million in bonds to begin the process and deal directly with EPA and then pursue polluters later. And we felt that the legislature should enact a fair contribution mechanism that would allow some modicum of proof to inject some fairness in the cost recovery process. Now, the program envisioned in the original draft would have accelerated cleanup. It would have eliminated delays that will otherwise be associated with bickering over responsibility and endless litigation. And it would have provided a major economic stimulus to the area, pumping millions of dollars annually into the economy and generating significant employment opportunities as a result. Finally, it would have infused a modicum of fairness into the cost allocation exercise. The current version of the bill recognizes that it may be premature to authorize the $150 million of pollution control bonds. For that reason, the current bill provides that the existing RIFS process, which is ongoing, will be monitored, and once the record of decision is issued by the EPA, a report will be prepared to the legislature indicating the amount of pollution control bonds which should be issued to finance the implementation of the record of decision if the state of Oregon elected to engage in this process. The latest version also acknowledges significant disagreement, primarily among agencies of the government, as to which agencies and parties should have the opportunity to direct the cleanup. Although the original bill invested the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality with this authority, the bill before you creates a new entity known as the Willamette River Cleanup Authority. The authority will have the ability to request assistance from other agencies for the purpose of monitoring the process. It will also have the obligation to report back to the legislature regarding the cost of implementation. Because the harbor is a matter of statewide concern, I believe cleanup plans should be monitored closely by no less than the governor and members of the Legislative Assembly. More significantly, the bill does not deprive the federal government or the state of Oregon of any tool or process that it already has to force cleanups, including those applicable to the Portland Harbor. Passage of this bill does not affect the authority of the federal government to issue abatement orders. It in no way interferes with the authority of the EPA to tap the Superfund itself, although the Superfund is broke. And it in no way interferes with the authority of the Department of Environmental Quality to issue orders regarding cleanups. It does, however, recognize some very harsh realities. First, the legislation recognizes that neither the EPA nor the DEQ have sufficient funds available in the Superfund to do this. Representative Close asked a question earlier about why is it that the Superfund has run out of money. Well, the Superfund was initially authorized by and funded by a petroleum tax. The petroleum tax lapsed during the previous administration. It has never been reauthorized. The only sources of funding that the Superfund currently has are the monies which it recovers from responsible parties as it expends its funds and then seeks contribution. And that's why it is a diminishing source of revenue. The EPA recently announced that it no longer has funds to support even the currently funded projects like the McCormick and Baxter project. And so the EPA is now withdrawing funding from that project. So the that option for resolving cleanup of the river is long gone. Second, the legislation recognizes that it would be virtually impossible to coordinate the 80 PRPs by issuing abatement orders to each of them by the EPA.
having 80 engineering plans, 80 sets of criteria for cleanup is just an impossible task. As amended, the bill places a process, puts a process in place that could result in the state grabbing the bull by the horns, taking the initiative, and cleaning up our incredible statewide water resource. It would also provide a forum for discussion, of a fair contribution mechanism that would reflect how other contribution laws are structured. Many in this room are scared to death that of a conversation. And I would not ever be afraid of a conversation. If we're going to pursue public policy, there is nothing wrong with conversing about it and focusing on the merits of ideas as opposed, again, to the identity of the proposers. I believe it will give the state an excellent tool to clean up the river. Now, with respect to the amendments, and I'm speaking only for myself, I do not support the A8 amendment. The A8 amendment basically rips out the very premise behind the bill, that being the coercive nature of the Superfund is the reason why there is no cooperation, and recognizes, in my view, a fiction that everyone will be able to cooperate and bring this project to a successful completion. That is not true. The remainder of the A8 amendment is opposed by the Department of Environmental Quality, and for those reasons, I oppose the A8 amendment. I do support the A9 amendment. The first part of the A9 amendment reflects some of the governor's expectations. It deletes the term rapid to make sure that there are not unrealistic expectations placed upon the governor. Lines 3 through 8 were designed to address some, not all, but some of Senator Carter's concerns. Lines 9 through 11 were designed to address a DEQ concern regarding what would be included in remedial actions. Line 12, with respect to the governor or his designee, was inserted to make this easier for the governor, although I certainly understand the chair's concern about that, and if were the chair ultra concerned about that language, the words "or the designee of the governor" could be stricken from the amendment, as far as I'm concerned. And finally, the lines 15 through 17 were designed to address Senator Carter's concern regarding separation of powers. There is a Supreme Court case called Martin versus Oregon Building Authority that stands for the proposition that the legislative and executive cannot commingle in the exercise of a government function by deleting the provisions regarding subpoenas and compelling witnesses and the like, which really aren't needed in this bill. In my view, we eliminate even the specter of that problem. And so the A9s, I believe, are a very good faith effort to address all of those concerns. The A10s are a matter of choice for you. And I believe the factors that you should take into account or consider taking into account are whether you believe that the flexibility of the presiding officer should be constrained at all with respect to their appointments, or whether it's important to leave them unconstrained based upon the source of the funds and the fact that this is a statewide resource. But that is an amendment that I have no position on, and is my view of policy choice that I'm sure you will make. So I'm sorry I've been long-winded, but I try to also respond to some of the comments that have been made earlier, and I hope that I've done more to clarify than to complicate.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I do have a question.
Mayor Flores.
Thank you, Mr. DiLorenzo. I've heard a few different times that this bill would represent a duplicative process, and I wonder if you could give me your perspective on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Flores, I do not think this is a duplicative process. In fact, this process is more investigative. This process will investigate the option of the state of Oregon grabbing the bull by the horns and cleaning up our waterway like we should, emphasizing action first. I know there was some of the references to the Tom McCall administration were derided by some of the commentators here, but that truly is one of the reasons why we feel that the state should take action. Governor McCall years ago had no authority to establish public beaches. He flew his helicopter down to the beach and exercised his moral authority and was able to establish public beaches in this state. In the same way, I believe the state of Oregon, the governor has the moral authority to clean up the Willamette River. And instead of duplicating a process, this bill builds on an existing study process, takes advantage of all of the resources that have been devoted to the study. Once the study is completed, then gives a recommendation to the legislature as to A, whether we should do this to clean up our state resource, and B, how much it will cost.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Senator Metzger, did you want to follow up with any final comments? Okay, great. All right, that was all the public testimony, and with that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 751. And we'll be looking over the next week or so to see about having a work session on the various amendments and on this bill. So thank you very much. And with that,
I don't want to have you here.
Yeah, no questions. Okay, that we are adjourned.